Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck. I'm Owen Slott, and after last week's Slash Your Wrist, Death of Rugby episode, we're going for a slight change of mood this week. We will be celebrating the joys of the European weekend, the likes of La Rochelle, the Leicester Tight Five, Chris Ashton's kicking technique, and the great weekend of English clubs in Europe, where they played six so far and lost six. To spread the joy, I am joined today by our eternal ray of sunshine, Stephen Jones, and one of the finest Scotland under 20 props never to go beyond under 20 level, the great Alan Dimmock. Great to see you, boys.
He's gone beyond under 20 in age, by the way, but maybe not level.
But I still look youthful and exuberant, obviously.
Who told you that?
Anyway, let's keep going.
That was a pregnant pause. But no comeback news on that front, Al.
No.
Great weekend, a good weekend. I was at Exeter. I saw a stunningly intense game, if not a brilliant execution from the Exeter team. Steve, you were at
Toulon, and which I absolutely loved. It was everything that the European Cup should be, and actually, I think it was needed because the European Cup has got to move on now. There is a danger, in my opinion, that it's not seen to be a step up to English and the French leagues, and in many ways sometimes it's not, and I just think we needed those occasions. Toulon is a bizarre place, you know. It's a very, very odd place, but we had to absorb the loss of Johnny Halliday, of course, which the reaction to Johnny Halliday sadly passing away was staggering
in Toulon.
Oh God, it was unbelievable. They had his songs before the game, after the game, half time, everywhere you went, and the restaurants were saying that because it was Johnny's funeral, that's why there were no people there. It was just extraordinary. I mean, I'd put him up there with Elvis and Bruce Springsteen. Not many people would agree with that, but it was staggering, the intensity of the grief for the great man.
Up there with their other favourite Johnny, who's got a statue outside the stadium.
Yeah, well, that's right. He's even bigger than Johnny, but the long list of French rock stars, which I can't think of offhand, is now denuded by one more.
Al, you're a Johnny Halliday fan. Have you recovered? And you were sort of covering base for the weekend of European rugby, weren't you?
Yeah, I was sort of in the nerve centre trying to keep track of all of it. Obviously, I was reeling after that Halliday news. But game must go on.
Well done.
And I'll tell you what, just for French rugby as well, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk in greater detail about Toulon nicking it with that late try at the death there. But for all the doom and gloom about the results for the English sides, I mean, some of the French performances, and I'm sure we'll talk at great depth about La Rochelle and the way they're playing. I mean, what a force they are. It's rare to see a team, for example, if you look at the example of Exeter, where you were, they have worked so hard over a number of seasons to get there, whereas La Rochelle seem to just have done it in the blink of an eye, and they just seem to have found this magic formula. Whether they run out of steam, because obviously they've never been there to the knockouts before.
They're kind of breaking the rules, aren't they? I mean, we sort of have this accepted wisdom that you have to work your way through it, and after a few years of learning and failure, and yeah. I mean, Saracens sort of literally went quarter-final, lost, semi-final, lost, final, lost, done it.
Yeah, but don't forget La Rochelle lost in the semi-finals of the, even though they top of the table last year, they lost in the semi-finals of the top 14. Mm-hmm. So they could well be going through that process. They have come up quickly. They got this amazing sponsorship thing where instead of having one massive guy with more money than sense, they've got 120
yeah.
sponsors, and it just works beautifully. They must have a great commercial department. But to be honest with you, who cares where they came from or why? They're there, and blimey, wasn't it fantastic? Was it fantastic?
So, Al, you said it was a good weekend for the French. I mean, if you're looking at it from an international point of view, it was a great weekend for the Irish. Their three teams in the Champions Cup won, Connacht in the Challenge Cup won, and as mentioned, it was a miserable weekend for the English. What do we think, gents, about the English performance over the weekend, the English clubs? I feel that they're, to flag that up too big in the headlines and make judgment and assessment and conclusions is massively jumping the gun. It was the worst weekend, the worst. English clubs have never lost six in one round in Europe. But admittedly, they got seven, and as we're speaking, we're awaiting Saracens playing Clermont this evening, which you'd probably marginally have them to shade that one. But still a very bad weekend.
To be fair, though, I think it looks worse than it is. If you take two results in particular, Quins have done absolutely nothing in the Champions Cup this season and are rightly out of the running now. You imagine that they'll play their next game, they're not going to offer much. I can't imagine there's going to be a huge resistance from them. They've got a point from the whole debacle. And then you look at Northampton Saints, who have had such an unattractive season, if you can call it that. They're up 1 minute and then they're down
the
next
5 minutes.
That's
about the nicest thing anyone said about Northampton for weeks, isn't it? Unattractive.
Absolutely, because it's hideous the way that they've gone about things. And you hear horror stories about fans being driven away from watching them play. So if you look at their results and their horrible performance and Quinn's, the way that they've performed in Europe, you take those out, then yes, it was a pretty bad weekend for the English, but it's, you know, that's half of the games in the round gone, and there's so many teams that are still alive. Exeter are still alive.
Yeah, Steve, what's your view on that? Take Northampton and Quinn's away and the rest of them are still pretty competitive?
Oh, because they are. You know, I mean, I'm sure that Leinster's coaches all week will be saying, beware Exeter backlash. I don't think Exeter have ever been as tuned into Europe as they have been to the Premiership, but Exeter can definitely win in Dublin, no question about it. Wasps, amongst all that heavy defeat, did get a bonus point. So, I mean, all they've got to do to bypass La Rochelle, I say all, is they've got to beat them and restrict them to not getting a bonus point. So, you know, I mean, they're still in it. Saracens, clearly, we may know the result when our listeners are listening to this. Bath, I think, can definitely beat Toulon. Just a very quick word about Bath. It was the best I've seen them play for 3 or 4 years. They were so devilish and they were so aggressive. They were so hard, as were Toulon, incidentally. This thing that these guys are rich swines who don't play for the jersey. They played massively for the jersey. And just to single out one part of the Bath team, front row, Dan Obamo and Lahif. My goodness, they were startlingly good. Their energy in the loose and on the defensive line was something. And they also held up really well in the scrum. So to me, Bath, if they can replicate that, are going forward. And I think Bath can beat Toulon and put the Premiership teams back on the board.
The interesting thing about that Bath Toulon game, and it's certainly will be the talking point that everyone will be looking at, if it's not gone viral yet as a clip, it will do eventually, is that Chris Ashton kick into the waiting mitts of Jonathan Joseph to get his try. And, I mean, Steve's mentioned it there, that game looked like it was just good fun. That's what people want to see from Europe, because it's supposed to be a relief from the slog and awe of your weekly club competition. To have this moments like that, it's fantastic to see someone like Chris Ashton. Now, I still don't believe he's a fullback. I know Toulon have been playing him there, and it means that they've got an embarrassment of riches, because they can play Tuasova on one wing and Radrada on the other wing, two explosive Fijian players who can pull something out of nothing, or at least knock someone on their backside. So that's fantastic. But the other thing you've got to show is that Chris Ashton has to play. He's already, having been there for such a short period of time, is already a must-pick for Toulon. And, okay, there was that howler where he kicked the ball straight into Jonathan Joseph. But, as Steve said before we came on here, he had a good game apart from that, and he's already vital for them. The other thing from that game, and it's certainly a thing that I've heard a lot of grumbling about, is the injury to Faletau and Bastereau coming in from the side of the ruck. I mean, that's a big thing to be blindsiding you with. Bastereau, to knock him, and people are pretty furious about the fact that Faletau should be exposed to that kind of, I suppose what you could call it, as an attack at the ruck, and he's damaged his knee ligaments again, and suddenly one of the best players in Europe is staring down the barrel of a few weeks off because of something that you can't control.
I think it may be more than that. I mean, it was almost the first thing that the Bath coaches said in the press conference. They drew attention to it. And it'd be interesting to see whether the guy's been cited. It was nasty. Incidentally, just going back to Ashton, I totally agree with Big Al about the way the game was played, and also Ashton. Some wings make natural fullbacks, but Ashton is a real an offensive runner. And fair play to the bloke, he was coming in as first receiver at Rucks. He was coming in at scrum half at Rucks. And that guy, if we'd only left him alone and stopped badgering him for things that were extraneous to rugby, he could have been a magnificent England player. I think he's one of the best wings England have available, if not the best. And that guy is danger. And I felt very sorry for him for that awful kick. But as Al says, he may be many things, a fullback isn't one of them.
He absolutely screwed another one about 10 minutes from the end, less than that actually, just when...
That's just too long, they always get something horribly wrong. I heard a great story about their, for instance, this might sum up too long, that I was talking to them about their terrible training headquarters. They've actually got a magnificent brand new training headquarters. Apparently it's absolutely state of the art. It's wonderful, somewhere outside Toulon. They never use it because the first time they ever used it, they lost, and they're too superstitious to go back to it. Now that sums them up. Ashton fullback is another thing. Also, why would you sign, with greatest respect, Treen Duke, who was absolutely abysmal? So they've got half a great team.
But Toulon doesn't make sense, is it? I mean, it's a circus.
They're a bit like a bumblebee, aren't they? They shouldn't, by the laws of physics, be able to fly, but somehow they just manage to do it. And you're right. I think circus is the right word to use there. Sorry to cut you off. But if you look at that entire back line, it's not exactly littered with kicking options anyway. Mention Tuisova and Radrada. Ashton's proven that he can't kick a ball. And then you've got Bastereau, who I'm imagining he'd knock the stuffing out of it, but I don't imagine how accurate it'd be. But that's not what the team's been put together for, is it? And I think that's what you're away to allude to, Owen, is the circus nature of it all.
Well, the way it's put together seems bizarre to me. The way they select players and personalities that don't stick together and glue together, which, if you look at the amount that's been spent and the amount of caps that they've had for the last decade playing for their club, I mean, it's there's only been like a 3-4 year period when actually the whole thing gelled and the right personalities managed to find a way to work and they took hold of it, which was the Johnny Juan Smith Matt Gitto era when the whole thing glued and it really worked. But I think if you just chuck this sort of smorgasbord of international superstars at it and expect it's going to work, I mean, it just doesn't. And
but it's only going to work for 3 years, because if you're not got a development process underneath it, well, then you are going to reach a peak. Then there's going to be a gap again, which they're currently in. You know, I mean, Bastereau and Nonu, imagine being a wing playing outside those two. You never get the ball. I mean, Nonu is not remotely the player he was in the World Cup. Bastereau was given the Man of the Match award on Saturday. I would really like to know who voted for him, because that was a total circus.
Just on the subject of Ashton, though, question to you in a minute, Al, on that, but his TV interview afterwards was magnificent, and that's another reason why he's so appealing to fans. So he made the howler, which looked like it was going to cost them the match, and then he comes on the interview afterwards, and he's laughing at how bad he was. He's just laughing at his misfortune and laughing at the fact that he got out of jail free because they won the game. And it just has a sort of magnetism that puts a lot of people off him, but when he's like that, it's fabulous.
Yeah, well, look, he's an individual. It's like Cipriani. I mean, a lot of people get put off these guys because they're characters, and that is one of the thunderous weaknesses of modern-day rugby.
Steve said that he would have Ashton as your first choice England wing, or
first choice England wing.
I think he's got to be in the squad, certainly. I mean, you might not want to play him every week, depending on who you're playing against. But why? I can't fathom why he hasn't been selected as much as he should. It's just one of those things that seems inconceivable to me, because you hear so much bleating about where he fits in defensive systems and how bad he is at retreating in defence, what he options on that side of the ball. But when you've got someone as lethal as that, I can't think of another nation that would disregard a player that finishes like he does. Mm. It just seems bizarre to me, because if you look at other nations and you look at the players that they're willing to carry, for example, before we saw Rico Ioane come onto the scene, Julian Savea was allowed to play himself out of bad form. Scotland at the moment, for example, have been playing players like Tommy Seymour, who's not in fantastic form for Scotland recently, but yet he's capable of, and you saw it against New Zealand, I believe it was, capable of just turning it on and creating a very good try. Chris Ashton can create things when he's going forward if you allow him to play through. That's why I wouldn't have him as an automatic starter, but it seems inconceivable to me that he's not in the mix.
There's one other thought on what we've been talking about, the Faletau injury. It's unrelated to the fact that Bastereau comes in to the ruck the way he did, but I look at Faletau and the amount of rugby he's played since the Lions. He's had more starts than any other Lion. He's barely been given a week off. I was looking at this morning. He's had 11 starts this season. He started on the 2nd of September when the Irish players didn't start until October. I mean, that's got nothing to do with Bastereau coming in and taking him out illegally like that. But it waiting to happen, in my view.
Well, of course it was. And he's the one who got hit this week. But I'm afraid I don't want to go back to what did you describe it last week as the sporting suicide or whatever we were talking about. But there are too many big matches. There are far too many international matches. Toby's Faletau has come off the back of playing South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, and then straight back out to play for your club. And it is ridiculous. And if Bastereau didn't get him, someone else was going to fall over of his own accord. And these big, proud men, we shouldn't keep asking them what we ask of them. And I was really disappointed, really. I'm sorry, this is not off the point, it's on the point, to hear Steve Brown of the RFU saying, giving us a big thing about why they need four tests next autumn, not really paying any recognizance to player welfare whatsoever. Really bitterly disappointed with Steve, who I think is a good man.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Off Air, the podcast, with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
We are delighted at this stage to welcome back one of them, heroes of the podcast from the Lions tour, fair to say, Steve?
No.
Okay, sorry. Hyperbole is the one of the greatest sins in this business.
One of the emerging forces, I'd say.
Yeah, okay, all right. We have an emerging force here called Peter O'Reilly, who podded a lot with us while we were in New Zealand. Peter, great to have you back. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Owen, and thanks to Steve for picking me up there.
So we're talking to Peter here, who is in our Dublin studio, who is going to explain to us. So Pete, you were at the Munster game on Saturday, correct?
I was, yeah.
And that was one of three Ireland wins in Irish sides wins in Europe in the Champions Cup. That is, Connacht also won in the Challenge Cup. It was three seasons ago, two seasons ago, that there wasn't a single Irish team in the semi-finals, and now the whole picture seems to have changed. Peter, is there a reason for this, or is that just the cycle of sport and the way it goes?
Is there a reason? Certainly, we thought it was Armageddon about 2015, 2016. That was the season when it was all an Anglo-French affair in the quarterfinals, and none of the provinces actually made it through. I think there was a bit of a World Cup hangover at play there. There were also maybe coaching teams who were just getting into their stride or were slow to get into their stride. And the balance was redressed slightly last season when we had Munster and Leinster in the semi-finals. to be honest, we tend to look at those two. Those are the two who have the real pedigree in this tournament. And those are the clubs, I suppose, which see the Champions Cup as being the be-all and end-all of their season. I know Munster would have been pretty happy to get to a semi-final last year. Leinster probably saw it as an opportunity blown. They could have won away against Clermont in the semi-final. They reckon that they blew their opportunity really at the end of the pool stages when they drew in Castres and therefore denied themselves an opportunity of a home semi. Because while I think Saracens were probably the best team in Europe last year, Leinster fancied their chances against them.
Yeah, Pete, Leinster were very, very efficient against Exeter yesterday. I mean, were you surprised by that at all, or is that just the form that they're in week in, week out?
Not necessarily week in, week out, but certainly they would see it as a test match for them, whereas Exeter, you suspect it's the next match in their schedule. Whereas if you look at the guys who were playing at Sandy Park yesterday for Leinster, the likes of Furlong, Healy, Henshaw, Kearney, O'Brien, Sexton, Toner, they hadn't played for Leinster since October. They'd been on Ireland duty and they were given the week off the week before they went to Exeter. So it was all about preparation for that being
That tells a tale of the different approaches internationally. Do you see Munster continuing on their rich vein of form, Pete? Because the Munster situation is one of uncertainty, and there are some key players whose futures we don't know if they're going to stay there. There's new coaching. It doesn't seem to me to be like a settled unit that's ready to take on Europe. But there again, they didn't have much trouble with Leicester on Saturday.
There's been I suppose that all the talk about contracts might have actually worked in their favour, to be honest, Owen. I think once they saw that they had Leicester in their pool again, both sides, I mean, from talking to Jordan Murphy as well, they knew immediately they were going to be in the back-to-backs at Christmas time, because obviously the television companies want it that way. They see it as a pretty sexy fixture with loads of history, loads of European history. So I think really no matter how they had been going in the Pro 14 coming into that, it was a separate issue. And Munster against Leicester at 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening in Thomond Park, it's sort of be all and end all for Munster, and I think you could argue that they wanted it just a little bit more. I think even though Leicester came there on the back of they remembered last year's defeat in Thomond, which is pretty embarrassing, I think they came out to make a statement, but they still were blown away by the physicality and the intent of Munster, especially in the first half when it was 23-3 by half time, and it wasn't really much coming back from that.
Would you say there's two teams there that are capable of winning the whole competition, or one?
I would think Leinster have a real chance. I think Munster have a chance of getting to the knockouts again, but I don't really think they've got the quality to go all the way. But it is a special tournament for them, so they're going to be difficult to beat. I don't see them winning the whole thing, though, whereas I do see Leinster as real contenders now.
And just on that contract front, Pete, so we're talking here about Peter O'Mahony and CJ Standard. They're the key names at Munster who are out of contract at the end of the season. If you're reading the tea leaves, do you think that both will stay, or how do you think that will shake down?
I think absolutely both will stay, and I think O'Mahony, for example, would be mad to go to France or England, where both leagues there are incredible tests of your physical durability. And the way he plays, I don't think if he was in France and he was being flogged week in, week out, he wouldn't make it past 30 as a professional player. Whereas in Ireland, he'd be managed because he's important to the national team. But he's not so important to Joe Schmidt that if he were to leave, that he could be assured, like Johnny Sexton, of being picked for the international team. There are plenty of back rows around. So I would see, obviously he would like to be paid what he's worth, but he's not going to be paid the same amount that he will get paid in France now or even England. But I think they'll come to some sort of an arrangement. He's too important to Munster, but he's not so important to Ireland that he's guaranteed selection. As for CJ, I think he came over to Ireland on the understanding that, you know, he was a project player who was going to play for Ireland, and he's part of that whole process. He's moving towards the 2019 World Cup with Joe Schmidt's.
It would be a real two-finger team to that project if he did walk out there, wouldn't it?
It would. I can't see that happening. You know, he's really bought in to the whole Munster thing, and he's been adopted by the province, and he's a folk hero here, almost to the same extent that O'Mahony is.
Pete, from our Dublin studios, thank you very much for joining us. Speeches again soon, I hope.
Great. Thanks, Owen.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Cheers. See you guys.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
We wouldn't say it to his, well, he was on air, but he is very good.
Now he's gone.
No, seriously, if you're playing in the league, you really can target games because it is so relatively easy to qualify for next year's European competition. And it is extremely, the situation in England, you've got to win every week. It's death or glory every week.
And that Exeter and, team that Leinster beat, Exeter played Bath the week before and Saracens the week before that.
Coming off, but the thing is, it's just the way it's worked out. I mean, there's nothing, it's not unfair in the sense that at least that you've now got to qualify properly and on merit from the Pro 14. But it is a massive advantage. I mean, the Leinster players just had a week off and they could build up for it and ditto Munster. So it is a massive advantage.
The thing about Europe, though, is it's a competition of inequalities, and it's what's actually strongest at the time. I mean, those Irish provinces spend nothing. They don't spend half. They don't spend as much as the English clubs do at the moment. English clubs and French clubs have got the edge on their salaries, but they have that great advantage, as we've been saying, of being able to pick and choose and target games.
And certainly, if you talk about the example we got there from Pete about CJ Stander, I mean, and Peter O'Mahony, that is the big thing you've got to weigh up if you're a test player from one of these countries. So we've just spoken about Talupe Faletau being played until he's pig sick of playing. And then you've got someone like O'Mahony who can be wrapped in cotton wool and looked after. And that's certainly something that's the balance you've got to weigh up. Do you want to play an extra couple years, if fitness willing, because you've got the opportunity? You might not earn as much, but your career might be longer. Or do you want to shorten it for that chance of having extreme glory in another country and also earning a fair bit of wedge?
So Europe round four is this coming weekend. It's the back-to-back, so every fixture from last weekend is the same this weekend, but the away venue. So we start on the Friday night, Ulster against Harlequins. I think we can probably all agree that Ulster will take that one because Harlequins are out of it and they'll be focusing on the Aviva Premiership because that's all they've got left. Saturday, some really interesting games. Montpellier against Glasgow. Montpellier were beaten at home by Exeter, but they seem to have got a foothold in the competition now, and Glasgow are pretty much out of it. So Montpellier are interesting, though.
I think Montpellier are interesting because they finally got rid of Jake White and what God knows what he was trying to do to the club. Now they've got Vern Cotter there who's a proven force. So Al will talk about Glasgow, but I think Montpellier could be making a late run towards glory.
Yeah, I think with Glasgow, the fans are starving for them to do well in Europe, and they've been the bridesmaids so often. I think it's still a little bit embarrassing to them that Edinburgh have done the best in Europe that season that they ran all the way to the semis, and Glasgow, for as phenomenal as they've been, and you have to give them a nod and a doff of a cap for the way that they've played in the league, in the Pro 14, because they're still unbeaten. And the way that they play there with such verve and vigour, it talks to you of what Dave Rennie can add to what Gregor Townsend did before. That's fantastic. And then they come up against Montpellier, who, I mean, there were wry smiles all round when they drew that fixture and realised that they were playing against big Vern Cotter again. And they've just come unstuck, and that's looking like a game where, if Glasgow aren't careful on that one, because it's slipping through their fingers now in Europe and they're having another season of disappointments in Europe, Montpellier could feasibly run away with that one.
Do you think Dave Rennie's been surprised by that, by how the European competition has been far more challenging?
I think certainly he would have entertained the idea that they done right, they could challenge. So I'm sure it's a blip for him. I suppose he's still trying to figure out what it is that he's got a lot of time, and as well as they've done, and he will be supremely happy about what they've done in the league, and the way that they've. I suppose the biggest issue for them is always the number of players that they lose to tests, and to come through as he has done with in the league with the players that he had left, you've got to pat him on the back for that. But then he's just not had enough to come through in Europe. That's what they'll have to try and address.
I'd use the window that they've got to rest players. They're not going to qualify. I'm sure they'll do their best, but they should concentrate on the league now. I wouldn't take a first team to Montpellier. I really wouldn't.
So Saturday also, Benetton Treviso got the home tie against Scarlet, so they nearly turned over to. That would have been an astonishing result. So that'll be a good one to watch.
Great match, and they must have every chance. If only they can finish off games, they'd be right up there.
Yeah, getting a man sent off for tip tackling is just, you know, that talk about shooting yourself in the foot when Francesco Minto did that.
Yeah, they had an hour, didn't they?
Yeah.
An hour with 14 men, and they still nearly
on.
Won. Yeah, yeah. So Leinster have got the home tie back against Exeter. I think that's quite hard to call. Exeter will really, really come back hard on that.
Very, very tight indeed. Wouldn't be surprised if it's not within one score.
Racing, Kestra, Bath, Toulon. Oh, that Bath-Toulon is a really delicious fixture after last weekend.
I think Bath have got to change up. I don't think that what you don't want to do is absorb like 75 minutes of pressure like they had to. I think Bath have got a way to win that game by attacking. It'd be horrible if it's pouring with rain. But Priestland, Anthony Watson, Jonathan Joseph, and amazingly, Aled Brew on the wing, who was sensational. They have got the ability to score with attacking rugby. And I think they've got to change up and take the game to Toulon, because they made ground when they did. Priestland, incidentally, was magisterial.
Apart from at the end, he chucked it away with some terrible kicking at the end.
I was fighting there, I didn't see that.
The Wasps La Rochelle game on the Sunday is, there's so many good. This round of Europe is really working, isn't it? I mean, that's a great fixture as well.
Brilliant.
And what a great thing for the fans of Wasps to have as well. I mean, you have to feel for them a little bit. It's rare that you can score five tries in a game and say, we've been hammered. And that's what happened for Wasps. So it's a fantastic opportunity for them in front of their home crowd to put on a real display. And La Rochelle, as we mentioned, that team is just...
Everyone loves La Rochelle.
Everyone loves La Rochelle. But I think the thing is as well...
Never been there.
We spoke earlier about Toulon and how they had players pulling together. And it looks like La Rochelle have just gone, we're going to pull a lot of guys from New Zealand that haven't quite made it. There's news today that it looks like Ihaya West is going to be joining them as well. So they would have Ryan Lamb at fly half and Brock James and Ihaya West, who scored that winner against the Lions for the Auckland Blues, if you cash your mind back to the summer. So, and it just looks like... It's almost like a Lego team. They're just putting players in here, there and everywhere, but they're performing. They're playing such magnificent rugby.
I mean, we don't know La Rochelle. We've never been there. Wasps have never been there. No, they have been there. And they've got all the videos and all the replays to prove it. And you would think that David Young and his coaching team will be really, really steaming round this week, saying we cannot give them that number of tries. And let's see if La Rochelle can take it on. Mm. But it's going to be absolutely wonderful.
Ospreys, Northampton. Ospreys, their heart's still beating there. Northampton, the heart's just packed in altogether, isn't it?
Look, the Ospreys are just a crazy team, because it seems to me they wait till they're in a disastrous run of form and they're playing abysmally, then suddenly they'll pull one out, which they can. But you'd be much happier if they were a bit more consistent. Northampton somewhere have lost momentum and lost all the wavelengths and need to get that back.
Do you think there needs to be a big change? I'm not sure what that big change is, but do you think there needs to be a massive change of some kind in Northampton?
We talked about this last week, didn't we? And I slightly evaded it. I said I passed the buck and said I don't want to be a heads must roll type journalist, but it's getting to that stage where they need to make a massive change. You can't just change the players. I mean, it's
Of course, they need to make a massive change. It's funny because over dinner in Toulon, when we heard the Northampton result, we were saying, well, you know, should Jim Mallander move on? Who would they bring in? And to tell you what, it's very, very difficult. You've got to make sure you don't get some idiot from the Southern Hemisphere who don't know what the hell's going on in the Premiership, etc. So I would have thought they'll sit down with Jim and say, look, we must have new coach changes. Who do we want? But you've got to be very careful what you wish for.
The thing is that they've had the base of the same coaching team for a very long time, and they haven't freshed it up. And the new guy they brought in this year was Phil Dowson, who had only left 2 years ago to go to Worcester. So it's the same thinking coming back in again.
Probably what exactly. You need an outsider who's never been to Northampton, but you retain some of the people who have.
The other two Sunday games, Claremont at home to Saracens. Well, we don't know what's happened in the home leg of that.
No idea how that's going to shape up.
We don't know what to make of that. And Leicester against Munster. That's the wonderful 5:30 kickoff. For goodness sake! But that's going to be a great match as well, isn't it?
Isn't there rumours that Tamur and Tuilagi will be reunited in the centre? Owen?
Well, Tuilagi was very close to playing the weekend just gone, and Tamura as well. So that could well happen. They've lost Vianu for a number of weeks, which I mean is the best broken field attacking fullback I think in the world. So that's a.
Do you know what though? Leicester last year were beaten up in Glasgow. They could not react for the home game. It's happened to them 2 years ago at Munster, and they did win the home game. Have they got the passion as well as the energy and the kind of technical quality to bounce back against Munster? Because I can remember many, many Leicester teams where they would be raging all week to put this right. Have this team got that rage in them to put it right?
Whilst we're on this as well, there are some teams, just to go quickly through
the subject of rage.
On the subject of rage, but actually, to go through the Challenge Cup, which some people tend not to pay attention for, you just got to give a little bit of respect to Cornet, Edinburgh and Newcastle and Poor, the other team in that mix, who are unbeaten at this stage and looking like they're likely to win again this weekend. How great would it be for Newcastle, for example, to go really far in this competition in the Challenge Cup? Because we've talked about how far they've come in the last few seasons, how well they've been performing in the Premiership. What a nice boon it would be for the ever-growing crowd up in Newcastle to see them get some kind of glory in Europe.
Who have they got this weekend?
They've got the Dragons this weekend.
Oh, they got no chance.
For a really, really great weekend ahead. I'm going to be in Claremont on Sunday. Steve, you will be?
Cleve. No, you asked me, that's where I'll be.
I forgot that you weren't covering a game.
It's called holidays.
Al?
I don't know yet. I'm yet to make my mind up. I think I'd want to go to Wasp. I think is where I'll probably end up going.
Okay. Gents, thanks very much indeed. This was The Ruck. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.